Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air.
Is the idea of making products delightful legitimate or just fluffy talk? Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn, and today is November 23rd, 2013. Glad you are back for day three of our innovation article, Silicon Valley's Delight. You can find it on pages 34, 35, and 36 in your Advanced magazine. And at the top of the program, I asked if this term, this idea of making products delightful is legitimate, if it's the real thing, if it does have some weight to it, and or is it just some fluffy idea, something that, oh, it just sounds like cool and we'll be here today, gone tomorrow. Well, that's what we've been talking about, and companies and engineers out in Silicon Valley trying to make products delightful, not just functional, but actually making them something that people embrace and actually make part of their life. It all stems from Steve Jobs. According to the first day of this article, and it's his legacy, and he wanted to make products that surprise and delight people. And actually, he had a great influence on all of the people now that are there designing products, and everybody's trying to delight people. And if you do that, then you'll sell more products. My two panelists are back here in the studio with me today, Amanda Young-Gapir and Simon Stops. Hi, panelists.
Hello.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah, and before we get into our reading for today, let me get something from yesterday from each one of you.
All right. Well, yesterday, I think the word emulate is a great word that we can use. It made me think, for example, if you have a fashion design student, maybe her name is Sherry, and she emulates Jason Wu's fashion style. So when we say emulate, we mean to copy it, or it inspires you.
Okay. All right.
I've got a quote here from Bill Burnett that I think really expresses what this article's all about. He says, "You want to make a product that goes beyond its basic functions to create an emotional connection with the user." Yeah. So you want to make products that people feel very strongly about, really enjoy.
Yeah. All right. So, and that's especially true. Silicon Valley has evolved. I had mentioned how what I've seen in 20 or 25 years from my business experience to today, but even in the last 5 or 10 years, when you think of Silicon Valley and actually the world of technology, how that has evolved, and that has all changed as far as how not only products are designed, but also how they are marketed and sold to people to make this emotional connection. And now we're actually dealing in a culture of where people have maybe their one of their most intimate relationships is with their phone or their tablet. And I think that is actually one of the things Steve Jobs had in mind when he was working on designing iPhones and iPads. So, you know, how to make this thing you know, a partner with the person so that they are carrying this around all the time. I remember reading about Steve Jobs sitting in one of their planning meetings, and one of his engineers is describing the fact that he's almost not even listening to people, and he's sitting there moving his hand around. He's looking at his hand, and there's nothing in his hand, but he's visualizing the phone in his hand. And this was in the early development of the iPhone, and he's actually just looking at his hand. He's trying to envision what this thing looks like and feels like in the phone, and he's trying to design it so that it is comfortable and it's natural as far as the size and the shape of the phone. Now, think about this as far as Nokia. When Nokia ruled the world of cell phones, most of their phones were these tiny little things, and they were very convenient, but they didn't really fit the form of your hand. They were small. They were too small. When you put that in your palm, they were too small, and your fingers had to close too much around it, and there was more of a gripping action on it. Whereas now, you look at like an iPhone, the shape and size of an iPhone, it actually fits quite comfortably in your hand. And so it's a more natural thing to carry the iPhone around than a smaller Nokia phone than it was before. So that's, again, that's all in the design. It's not so much in the functionality of it. And that's what Steve Jobs was getting at. So let's get to our reading. We'll split it up into two sections today. And our first one will begin there on page 35.
A tangible idea. To see how this subjective notion can be turned into a tangible concept, devotees can look to Intuit, the California maker of financial software and services such as QuickBooks, TurboTax, and Quicken. A few years ago, Intuit executives adopted design for delight as a phrase to define the new approach. One of the reasons we chose that word to be a part of that phrase is that it's a positive emotion, said Karen Hansen, Vice President of Design Innovation at Intuit. We evoke this emotion by exceeding people's expectations. Still, who decides that a product has created a sufficient amount of delight? Hansen won't say how Intuit makes these decisions, but she notes that in general, psychologists have a number of tools to measure emotions, such as observing pupil dilation, or measuring changes in moisture levels on the skin. More important, Hansen said, is whether customers use a product and say, "Ooh."
A tangible idea.
Yeah. This paragraph starts out with, to see how this subjective notion can be turned into a tangible concept. And I'm sure you remember on the first day we talked about how this idea of delight is actually a very subjective thing. And by that we meant it's different for different people. It's very hard to measure. And so the idea in this sentence is basically we want to know how to turn this impractical idea into something that's like a useful concept or a useful idea. And a good example of this can be found at Intuit, this company.
Okay, now first off, what's the opposite of subjective?
Objective.
And how do we define objective?
Well, objective is not allowing your own emotion or feelings to make the decision, whereas subjective would be doing that.
Okay, more subjective feeling and emotions, objective, more facts and data.
Right.
Okay, tangible.
Usually when we use the word tangible, we're talking about something you can touch, something that's really there. But in this case, we're talking about a tangible concept. Mm-hmm. So we're really, you know, a concept's an idea. So here we're actually talking about a useful idea.
All right. What about devotees?
Those are people who are devoted to something. They really care about it. They're followers of a thing.
Almost like the word we used yesterday to start our reading, disciples, right?
Just the same thing.
Okay, and we're talking about taking a look at one of these companies that is integrating the word delight into their practice, Intuit.
That's correct. It's a California maker of financial software and services. We see they make QuickBooks, TurboTax, and Quicken.
Okay. All right. So surprisingly, they've been in business a good bit of time because TurboTax has been around for about 20 years and Quicken has been around for, I believe, 15 years or so. So they've been around a long time. That's quite a lifespan in Silicon Valley for products like that. So, but a few years ago, what about Intuit?
Well, their executives got together and they adopted or chose this slogan, design for delight, as a phrase to define their new approach.
Okay. All right. So this is kind of like almost the mission statement as far as how their thinking goes as far as product design.
That's right. When they design something, they want it to delight people.
Hmm. All right. And in fact, we hear from one of their executives in the next paragraph.
Right. We hear from Karen Hansen, and she's the Vice President of Design Innovation at Intuit. And she said that one of the reasons they chose that word, delight, to be part of the phrase is that it's a positive emotion. So when we hear the word delight, it brings up or invokes a positive emotion.
There's that invoke thing, and then we see evoke in the next sentence from Karen.
Yeah, she says, we evoke this emotion, or we get this emotion, we cause it, by exceeding people's expectations, or basically doing more than they expect we will do.
Yeah. Okay. That might be, for instance, if you do go to use maybe, say, their TurboTax software or their service, and all right, if you haven't used it before, maybe you go on, and everybody in America's got to file tax reports with the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, and nobody likes doing it. It's terrible, and it's a big headache, but maybe you can go use this TurboTax, go online and use it. All right, it's one thing to get the job done, but then what I think what Karen Hansen is talking about here, exceeding expectations, is, okay, maybe you go online, you access this, you use it, and boom, you're done in maybe 2 minutes. And as a user, you're sitting there saying, wow, this is like the easiest I've ever been able to do my taxes.
Yeah.
That's what she's talking about, exceeding expectations.
Right. It's a follow through. They're
right.
Actually delivering what they say they're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I buy a product, if it's better than I think it was going to be, or maybe it's quicker, it does a better job, then wow, I'm like, hey, that's really great. So, all right. Still, who decides that a product has created a sufficient amount of delight? Now, first off, sufficient.
Sufficient means enough, the right amount. And that, of course, is the whole sentence is talking about how do we measure what is the right amount of delight somebody would experience.
How does Intuit do it?
Well, she says nothing to answer that question. She says she won't say how Intuit makes those decisions, but she does add a few interesting points. She says that in general, psychologists have a number of tools to measure emotions, and these are kind of interesting. She says they observe pupil dilation. So that's the black spot in the middle of your eye,
mm-hmm.
and dilation means it's getting bigger or smaller, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're watching your eyes to see if they're getting wider or narrower, I guess, and measuring changes in the moisture level of the skin, how wet your skin is.
Yeah. I believe with pupil dilation, if you are more interested in something, your eyes will dilate. They will get bigger. The black part actually will get bigger. And actually the moisture levels on the skin, these are actually also things that are used to measure with the polygraph or the lie detector test, right?
That's correct. If we want to know if somebody's lying or not, they can also measure that. They also measure dilation of the eyes as well to see, and also different body language to see whether somebody's lying.
So what Karen Hansen is talking about, there are actually some physiological reactions we have to whether or not we are excited or delighted with a product.
Right.
Yeah. And more important, though, what does Hansen say?
Is whether customers use a product and they say, ooh.
Yeah, the most obvious way.
Why would we say that is the most obvious way?
Well, you know, if you want to know if people like something, you say, do you like it? And they say, yeah, right? Or if you watch them using it and they're smiling, they must like it. If they're throwing it on the floor, they don't like it so much, right?
Yeah, and we had actually talked about that earlier in the article. Actually, yesterday in our first reading on page 35, instead of all the statistics or anything, just watch someone use it and see if they smile or laugh with joy. So that's the easiest way to find out if the customers are delighted in your products. Okay. Let's get on with our next reading.
Potential problems. The problem is that delight runs the risk of becoming so overused that its meaning becomes diluted. The temptation is for executives to believe they can create that special feeling by simply uttering delight without rethinking the way they create products. Silicon Valley has a habit of taking serious ideas, slapping cringe-inducing labels on them, and then flogging them to death. Witness the quick rise and fall of gamification, a word that pointed to the growing use of game mechanics in products and was suddenly on everyone's lips. A couple of years ago, until people discovered it couldn't be spoken out loud without gagging a little. Can delight avoid that fate? Can it secure a place in the pantheon of Silicon Valley's enduring, indispensable lingo? Don't we need delight to talk about things and experiences that exceed our expectations? Said Robert I. Sutton, an engineering professor at Stanford University.
Okay, this is Bill Quinn with Simon Stops and Amanda Young-Pierre. We're on our final reading of our three-day innovation article, Silicon Valley's Delight. And this section talks about potential problems. We've been talking about all the great, cool things about having delightful products and delighting your customers. But as with all aspects in business, there are some potential problems.
That's right. We see that delight, or the word delight, runs the risk of becoming so overused that its meaning becomes diluted. And to run the risk of something means that it has the potential to be dangerous in this way, of becoming overused. So used so much that it is not so strong. It doesn't have the same strength of meaning anymore.
Okay. And if that happens, then it becomes diluted.
Which means watered down, less strong, less powerful, weaker.
Okay. And this happens with all terms, I think. I'm just thinking of like commercials, marketing, campaigns. No matter how good they are, eventually they become diluted.
Right? That's right. The first day we talked about that term thinking outside the box and how everybody says they're thinking outside the box now. Yeah. And so the term is just not particularly useful anymore.
Okay. Now, we see here the temptation is for executives to believe they can create that special feeling by simply uttering delight. Now, first off, the temptation?
Right. The possible problem for these executives is to believe that they can create a special feeling just by uttering delight.
Yeah, when we have temptations in business, a lot of times business decision makers will fall back on the easy decision or maybe something that looks alluring. Maybe they've seen somebody else be successful. And in this case, a lot of executives might have seen, oh, Steve Jobs was successful with this. Apple's been successful with this. So they might be tempted to copy this model because, hey, it worked for them. It's going to work for us. And often when we are tempted, it's not always a good thing for us.
Yeah, that's right. And in this case, the temptation is that executives just want to say, let's make something that delights people without actually changing the way they're making the products.
Yeah, and they're uttering it means they're just saying it. They're not carrying through with action. If you utter something, you just say it quickly, but you're not really meaning it or carrying through with that. And also they are not doing it. They're without rethinking the way to create products. Actually, what they're doing is they're just slapping a new label on it. They're slapping a new logo or a new advertising slogan on top of something that really hasn't changed that much. Now, speaking of that, Silicon Valley has
a habit of taking serious ideas and slapping cringe-inducing labels on them. Okay, when you mentioned slapping before, here we're talking about putting something on very hard in a quick fashion, like quickly. Like when you slap something on or you slap something together, you do it very quickly without a lot of thought. In this case, they're not seriously thinking about it. And so in juices or what people want to do is they want to cringe.
Cringe-inducing. Mm. Tell me about that.
Well, when you cringe, it's kind of when you see something that is just terrible. You don't say anything, but you kind of go, with your body, right? You cringe. You really don't like it. And this is – they're putting labels on things. They're describing things in ways that make people kind of go,
I felt about the commercial I mentioned yesterday or the day before, the Apple commercial, the Made in California commercial, that I thought they had the serious music and the serious talking and the slow motion poignant scenes. And And to me, that was cringe-inducing because it just I thought it was just so over the top that what they were doing was saying that people actually were having these close emotional relationships with their phones and iPads. And that was cringe-inducing to me because what they were doing was replacing real people with gadgets for you to have a relationship with.
Sure. They also say they're flogging these ideas to death. Flogging, of course, means whipping or beating something to death. This doesn't actually mean beating the idea. It means using it over and over again until people are so sick of it they never want to hear about it again.
Think of a popular song maybe that you hear on the radio. You like it. It comes out in the first week or two. You want to hear it again, and you hear it again. And then about week four, after it has been played 10,000 times, you're like so sick of it, you never want to hear it again. It has been flogged to death. That's a great example of the pop song that has been played too much. In fact, witness.
Yeah, they say witness the rise and fall of gamification, which of course was this idea. You want to make all of your tools and apps into games.
Yeah.
So make learning easier because you're using a game to do it. Make work easier because you're kind of playing a game while you do it or whatever. Making everything into games.
Yeah, all right. And you can see a word there, gamification. Somewhere somebody came up with this, some techie came up with it and thought, wow, this is like really cool. I created a new word. Now I can use this on everything, right? And
right.
It pointed to this growing use of game mechanics. And it was suddenly what?
On everyone's lips a couple of years ago. And that's what we meant by all the rage. So a couple of years ago, it was all the rage until people discovered it couldn't be spoken out loud without gagging a little.
Gagging, of course, means choking. So when you say it, you're cringe-induced. You feel kind of sick saying it.
All right, yeah. People got so tired of hearing this, it became kind of a joke then. If somebody actually used it and they were trying to use it in a serious conversation, other people would actually be laughing maybe inside at the person saying, oh, my goodness, we don't use that term anymore around here. It's so old. So they were gagging a little on the inside. All right. Can delight avoid that fate?
That's right. Can delight stop that from happening, or will that also be cringe-inducing or make people gag a little? Well, these are all questions we need to ask. Can it secure a place in the pantheon of Silicon Valley's enduring, indispensable lingo? Well, that's a long sentence, but pantheon meaning a collection of something, an enduring, indispensable, necessary tech talk, lingo being tech talk, the talk or the language that goes with a certain occupation or a certain part of society.
Okay, so so many terms come and go. There are some, I guess, that have been used for a long, long time and are still in use.
Sure, exactly. You know, you think of the computer mouse. It's kind of a fun term. At some point it was, you know, like, oh, it's a mouse.
Yeah.
People were thinking that's really innovative, but it's become so much a part of the language of technology that we use it all the time without it making people want to gag. But then there's these other words that kind of – they're popular for a while and then not so popular.
Yeah. All right. So there are actually terms that have hung around for a long time. So that's what that sentence is talking about. Can delight be something that is used for a long time? Well, we finally hear in the end here from Robert I. Sutton, an engineering professor at Stanford University.
Right. He says, don't we need delight to talk about things and experiences that exceed our expectations? And so he's asking this question about the word delight and what it should mean and what the measurement should be for the word delight.
Yeah. Okay. Well, before we wrap up today, we always would love to get your thoughts on this, and there are several ways of reaching us. One of them is to go to our Facebook page. Naomi's going to tell you about that right now.
A quick and easy way to connect with the advanced team is by visiting the Studio Classroom page on Facebook. Each day there are new posts for Let's Talk in English, Studio Classroom, and Advanced. It's great to see all the comments that our friends post, and the advanced team checks the page several times a day. We often leave comments too. So join the crowd And we'll see you soon on the Studio Classroom Facebook page.
Okay, before we sign off on Silicon Valley's Delight, let me just get something from each one of our panelists that they picked out from today or the previous 2 days as far as what might be helpful to go back over again.
I guess the main thing for me is that we don't know if this word delight is going to become sort of an overused word or not, but the idea is definitely good for us as consumers because it means we're going to be getting products that are specially designed for us and for our needs, and that's a good thing.
I think just the word lingo, I think it's a great word to know. I think within our listeners, they probably are in different occupations. Within your certain occupation, for instance, if you're in the medical field, you'll have lingo attached to that, and people will know that. If you're in engineering, you have lingo associated with that. But just always remember that if you are in a mixed group of people and you're talking amongst yourselves, not everybody's going to understand what you're saying, so you might need a translator then.
Yeah, be careful when you use lingo in communicating with people. And also, another thing what happens is people use a lot of acronyms, you know, just the letters meant to represent things without fully explaining that. And they think, well, everybody knows what the acronyms mean. So, you know, like ASAP means as soon as possible. That's just a really simple example. But in our industries, we have acronyms that we use, and we don't realize not everybody understands them.
Right.
And just because they don't understand them, don't think less of them. That doesn't mean they're not as smart as you. Maybe they have acronyms you don't know.
Exactly.
So it just happens we all have our own little niche that we work in. I would recommend, when I look at this article, I go back to day one on page 34. If you go down to, I believe that is going to be line 21, this sentence is just really something, and if you just study that sentence, you'll learn a lot. In the surest sign that delight may be on the cusp of morphing from insurgent idea to overused buzzword, Microsoft Corporation in Washington and Dell Incorporated in Texas have embraced it. There is so much vocabulary in there, and make sure you go back to that day and listen to Amanda's explanation on it. That will help you very much. Listeners, thanks for being with us for this very interesting innovation article. Come on back next time. Till then, this is Bill.
Amanda.
And Simon.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.